Okay, welcome to episode 20 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. This podcast has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown. It's more of a lockdown for some of us and not for others, apparently. There you go, we had that today. My name is Tony Esmond, writer of the Monster Spotters Club and Target Hercules, co-host of the Awesome Comics podcast. Today we have, what are you rattling? I was going to write a big intro, but fuck that. John Ottaway, everyone. There you go.
Ahoy, Tony.
Long time coming, my friend. John and I have been pals for a while. So the aim of the episode is to give you an insight of a particular comic series that is a personal favourite of both of ours. John texted me the other day, so why don't you do this on the podcast? And my immediate answer was, why don't you come on and do it, John? John, yeah.
And then there was a delay.
So, John, what would you like to what would you like our listeners to hear about today?
It's Pat Mills' Terramex run with Roadbusters.
Exactly. So it's the Roadbusters Terramex story. He and Dave Gibbons. Dave Gibbons does the art and the lettering very nicely indeed. It ran between, they're all progs for those that are 2000 AD virgins, it's all progs. So it ran between 98 and 101, starting in February 1978. An interesting time. For once, it doesn't contain Rojaws and Hammerstein for a change, although it does contain one other member of the Roadbusters, who we'll talk about in a minute. What book are you reading it from, John? I think I've got a variety of sources for this one. What about you?
I've got it from the Complete Nuts and Bolts Volume 2.
Yes, I've got that one. That's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah. I did have this proc. I never read Star-Lord, so my sort of intro to Roadbusters is when the two merged. Star-Lord and 2000 AD merged.
Yeah, me too, I think. Apart from the odd issue, I think it was me like that as well. Yeah, so there's been a few sort of versions, as is the want of 2000 AD. They like to reprint the good stuff on and off, don't they? And the one we've got is the more recent. I think it's like 2016, something like that, came out.
Yes.
And this is volume 2. It's got a lovely cover. Did you want to describe the cover there, John?
It's actually, was this one of the covers in the progs? Because it's not in the thing, is it?
It was a pin-up. Oh, it's a reworked pin-up, I think.
Right, okay. It's Charlie being given the freedom of the city of Northpool.
Yeah.
And he's in a big stadium with his massive key hanging off of one of his arms and a medal.
Yeah.
Who made that medal and pinned it on, I don't know.
Did you notice who was in the audience?
No.
So you've got Dave Gibbons with his thumb up.
All right.
You got in front of him, you've got Pat Mills with his very distinctive hair.
Pat with the ginger hair.
Yeah. And did you notice who was far left? Isaac Asimov.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. I saw Granny Fraser.
Yeah, of course it is, yeah. She didn't want to live at the bottom of that mineshaft, did she? Yeah.
No, I never even noticed them.
Yeah, it's lovely. So the pin-up was less coloured, so they sort of recoloured it and put it as the cover, which I think works really well. So this is volume 2.
Yeah.
Volume 1 was mostly the Star-Lord stuff, and then travelled into the 2000 AD stuff. So for those that don't know, we'll give a little history of Roadbusters in a minute, but it did start in Star-Lord, which was kind of the companion comic to 2000 AD for a short amount of time, till it got hatched, matched and dispatched, didn't it? I think it's the phrase.
Yeah.
What's your comics origins, John? Where did you start reading comics?
Sort of similar to yourself, I imagine, with the our inverted commas age. sort of, Beano, I didn't really like the Dandy that much, but Beano, Core, Wizard and Chips, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I was in Germany when 2000 AD came out, so I wasn't there for Prog 1. I think that was about Prog 64. We moved back across in 77.
Were you a forces kid as well, were you? Or?
My dad was in the army. So the pads were up. And the first one I saw, it just said UFO on the cover.
Right.
And I thought, oh, it's about UFOs. And then I get it and I open it up and it's about, well, the first story in there was flesh.
Wow, okay. UFO. Yeah, but that's something of an assault on the senses in a good way, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then just sort of stuck with that more than anything from then.
Can you remember the number of your first prog or anything like that? Was it?
I think it was 64.
Okay, so it wasn't far from this, yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's it, because I did have these. I remember seeing my neighbour two doors down, Gary Bass. They made he used to get Star-Lord, and I was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Thinking, like, you're a traitor. This isn't 2018. Not thinking it's all the same people, you idiot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, and then I've moved in and out. It's difficult being in the army or moving round.
So you ended up in the army yourself as well, didn't you, for those that don't know?
Yeah.
Was it the Royal Engineers you were in, dude?
Yeah, same as my dad and my granddad. Yeah.
Right. Oh, nice.
And sort of still travelling around with my dad. We used to get it. I could get it in Germany, but it was a month late. Didn't really see many American comics. I put my gran and granddad's house up in Paisley. They did have that Superman and Spider-Man crossover.
Oh, yeah, the big Treasury edition. Yeah.
Yeah, where they have a fight. And I'd always remember that. I did eventually hunt that down. I got it in a comic book shop in Glasgow.
It's incredible, but, that. I do love that book.
It wasn't really till the 90s I sort of started reading any of the American Marvel DC stuff.
Okay. All right, so...
I went to Canada in the army and sort of went into my first comic book shop. I was like, holy shit.
Did you have to keep it? Do you have to keep it a secret from all the other people in the army? Like, I used to
yeah,
and get bullied. Yeah,
yeah. But I had things like Killing Joke. That's where I first saw Watchmen.
Right.
Things like that. So yeah, well late in the day, but that, in a way, it's helped because I'm still playing catch up, so I can buy trade. I don't have to wait.
Yeah.
For weekly stuff.
I get you, man. Yeah. So, were you aware of the writers and the artists? Were they characters who you followed or anything like that?
Not till later. When I was, so I don't even remember if the credit cards were in when these were first printed.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think they were, but by this time. But there are a few credited in. I think in this version you've got the complete nuts and bolts where they don't know who the artist is. Is that right? There's a couple of stories, which I think...
Well, there's a couple, I know, because I remember it being explained by Pat in Be Pure, Be Vigilant, Be Ave.
Yeah.
Where Carlos Osquero did a couple, and he was in a mood, so he gave a stupid name.
Yeah, there's a lot of pseudonyms going on, aren't there?
Like A Drora or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of... I think there's a lot of that going on. I can't remember if you were at Leamington when I interviewed John Wagner, and I started off by reading, I think, 12 pseudonyms.
Yeah.
And he just sort of giggled at them all and corrected me over a couple. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good stuff. Okay, so...
But I knew he was by the time of, like, Slain and Nemesis and that. I knew who Pat was, and Dave did Rogue Trooper.
Yes, so. Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame that they didn't work together more. There's a couple of Roadbuster stories that they do that are just both incredible, both brilliant. I've got the Nuts and Bolts version. I like you, I've got the Progs as well, but I've got a Titan Books version, a sort of early version of a trade from 83, which I bought off the shelf. Globe Comics in Ipswich, I bought it from. And for a trade, an A4 trade paperback, it was £3.50. There's a lesson to be learned there somewhere. And this has got the other main... I know they did a couple of other ones, but the other one that I really liked with Pat and Dave Gibbons was Death on the Orient Express, which I thought was brilliant. Really good, which again...
I think that was the very first story in 2018.
Oh, right. That makes sense then. Okay. Yeah. That's an incredible one as well, man. I know we'll get onto Terramex, but that one covers so much ground, you know, child abuse and... all sorts of things.
Yeah.
It's only a two-part of that one, which probably was the reason I didn't choose it for this chat. Now, you're still buying it now? You're still reading it now, you, or?
In and out, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
depends, depends who's in it, what's on
it. Yeah, I'm a bit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So let's do a little bit on Roadbusters. Originally appeared in Star-Lord, which was also an IPC title in May 78. Then went over to 2008, Prog 86. Created, as we said, by Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill, initially drawn by Carlos Pino and Ian Kennedy. There's a story that I've read now in two places that says that John Sanders, who was one of the managing editors at IPC, wanted a story about an ex-serviceman with superpowers who helped with disasters, like I think plugging up earthquakes and all this sort of thing. And Pat
thought it'd be shit.
Yeah, because he famously doesn't like superheroes as well. And I think just to piss him off, he turned it into a robot. And called them. Now, I don't know why it took me so many years to work this out, but Rodgers and Hammerstein.
You know what? I was about 14 before I was in a drama class, and someone they were talking about Pirates of Penzance.
Right.
and the I can't remember the drama teacher's name. She said Rodgers and Hammerstein, and I went Rodgers and Hammerstein. She went, "Why are you saying it like that?" I went, "That's how it's spelled." She went, "What? You know, we're having two completely different conversations."
Yeah.
And then I walked, and then I saw it. I thought, "Oh, Jesus! Right, okay."
Well, you caught on a lot quicker than I did. It took me years. I was an employed in a job and had read it for years on end before I realised that. Yeah, we don't externalise stuff, do we? Sometimes I think, you know, when you read it on a page, no. So it was written at an interesting time in British history. I'm going to say that there was some things that I think are worth mentioning, because we've basically got a visual in the comic. We've got a visual representation of capitalism in the UK taking over from the hardworking blue collar worker, haven't we? Really, there's an underdog. There's big industry,
it's,
you know, moving.
Isn't it? Yeah,
yeah.
In London.
And we'll talk about a bit of that in the story in a sec. But there were some things that were going on in London and in the rest of the UK at the time. It was the first time that foreign-made cars outsold UK models, which is a big blow to the sort of British confidence, I think, in a way, because we'd had places like Vauxhall that have always made, you know, thousands upon thousands of cars every year, you know. But, you know,
Leyland were on strike a lot then, weren't they, as well?
Yeah, that sounds about right, man, actually.
Late 70s, yeah.
Yeah. Freddie Laker had launched his new sort of budget airline, which showed a sort of an undercutting of quality, I think, to a certain people felt and stuff like that. And the other thing that I think is relevant, because it is so anti-establishment, is about 5 months before this came out, Never Mind the Bollocks was released from the Sex Pistols. And like you were saying to me earlier before we started recording, Margaret Thatcher was the head of the opposition. So she had not at that point become Prime Minister, but I think people were expecting it. You know, I think 79 she becomes Prime Minister, doesn't she?
Yeah,
and there was
just
there was
on the thing. Yeah.
There was a gaining, I suppose far right extremism in the UK was gaining ground. There was quite a few riots in South East London, in Birmingham, the year before. it's an interesting time of we just come out of the 3 day week. Money wasn't particular. You know, some people were suddenly feeling the pinch. You know, it's a funny time, and I think this story resonates so much because it hits the UK at that time. Where did you think Northpool was meant to be? Can I just ask you that before? I don't want to sort of preempt what I'm thinking, but did you have an opinion?
Until the last page, I just thought up north. I saw it as, because there's that ship. Well, we'll get onto it. That ship that's on there, it's come from Mega 31, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. Yeah, there's a few
so
little
I thought
links.
Northpool to be sort of Liverpool up the west coast of Britain, essentially.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
And then you see the song at the end, and okay.
Yeah.
Because I think when we talked about it the other day, I did say Liverpool, didn't I?
Yes, I think you did actually, man.
I forgot it was Northpool.
Yeah.
This sort of fictional city.
I sense that it was Liverpool. I think there's a lot of things. You've got the docks, you've got the, you know, the tower blocks, you've got the poverty, you've got the encroachment of, you know, big business taking over areas that, you know, were much, much more sort of community driven at the time. Yeah, definitely. So, should we have a little chat? So let's get into it. So Eve of Destruction is the first prog it appears in. You immediately are thrown into the story, as is the want of 2000 AD, because they haven't got time to spend hours on, you know, people moping in flats and stuff.
Yeah.
And we're straight into Charlie. He's at sea. He is essentially the pilot, a pilot robot, but a huge one, who goes out to sea when ships are in trouble during storms and drags them back to... I think they're overdoing it. I'm sure they could have done this with a couple of tugs, but instead they've got this huge robot.
Or some radar.
Yeah. The first thing that really struck me, I don't know about you, is the scale of these robots. They're the size of skyscrapers.
Yeah. Like Pacific Rim type size, if anyone's seen that film and not read this. They're massive.
Yeah. That's the other thing I wondered about. I was going to ask you about later, but we might as well mention it now. Is in an age of sort of mecha, tech, anime, giant warriors and stuff like that, why isn't this at least a cartoon by now? It's got it written all over it, isn't it? You know.
I mean, and this would be a great one-off into it as well.
Yeah.
This is, although I had read the ones previously, this is the first one I remember, because it does stand out as a one-by-itself story. Like you say, Rojaws and Hamstein aren't in this.
Yeah.
It's an all-by-itself story, although it's got, one of them
Well, I suppose technically it's got two because it's got Mr. Quartz in it, isn't it? I suppose.
Oh yeah, Mr. 10%, he's in it.
Yeah, yeah. So the boss of the boss of Robusters is a guy called Mr. 10%, Mr. Quartz, who he's allowed to be a businessman and be treated as a human because he is like 10% human. And I think if it dips under 10%,
he's still got a human brain, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he's got that classic sort of. He looks like he's got one big eye in the centre of his body, and he's got like that. What? Why they always have to have a glass dome over their brain.
Glass dome to see the brain.
Yeah, you got to see the brain. Yeah. So Charlie drags a ship, saves the ship. You know, we get faithful, reliable old Charlie is one of the quotes. And he's as cuddly as a giant skyscraper-sized robot can be. That is what Charlie is, isn't he? You know.
Yeah.
And he's dragged in.
He does look nice. You're not going to feel threatened when he walks out the storm at you, are you?
Yeah, so we establish him as the sort of everyman robot, don't we? Even then, but more importantly, we establish him as the blue collar robot, I suppose, the working man robot, you know. And he drags him into the art in this is phenomenal. Firstly, we'll talk about Dave in a minute, but just absolutely phenomenal, and it's all
you
in a
really
storm.
You really get the scale, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Just that first thing, you see. I mean, you can see the city in the background, but it shows how far into the water he is, and it's just over his ankle.
Yeah, and you get in the bay. You get there's like a sort of weird sub thing that is possibly one of the ships that was in the previous episodes in Star Lord and stuff like that. And Mr. Quartz is standing there with next to sort of you can tell he's a shady businessman because he's smoking a cigar and he's got a fedora on.
Good Trilby on.
Yeah, Trilby. And it turns out they're going to destroy. They're going to destroy North Pole. That's the plan.
Yeah.
And for some reason. He's quite dramatic, old Mr. 10%, because he shouts the Terramex, doesn't he? Shouts
yeah, it's massive. We're smashing things. They are called the Terramex.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And then we get what looks a bit like a Rolls. It is a Rolls Royce, isn't it? A Rolls Royce, but a sort of hover Rolls Royce. I'm going to say it's somewhere between a Rolls Royce and a Ford Cortina. It's not quite as glamorous from behind.
It's a Cortina, definitely a Cortina at the back, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? That's what I was thinking. Yeah. A hover Cortina. And they drive him into the slum. And in the slum are all the sort of locals.
Can I just say, with my present job of designing lifts, that lift would never work.
Why is that? Why? Oh, because he's got nothing above it.
Yeah, there's no guide rails. It would slap about and all the arse. Terrible. But yeah.
It's a very basic lift. There you go. You heard it here, folks. Pat, I hope you're listening. Sort your lifts out.
Gibbons. They blame him.
Yeah, Gibbons, what are you doing with your lifts? Amateur. So he's convincing Granny that she doesn't need to be in a tower block because she says, I like my old my high-rise flat. I had a lovely view. I used to wave at all the pilots. And shady businessman says, we mustn't stand in the way of progress, Granny. The council know best. You're in a low drop flat 999.
Flat 9999. Yeah.
And it turns out they've sort of inverted tower blocks and drilled holes in the ground and they've inserted the tower blocks.
I like the names of them as well. The Cozy Down Burrows and Snuggle Down Warren.
Yeah, it sounds like something out of Watership Down, doesn't it, or something?
Yeah, it sounds lovely. Yeah.
And
you go in it.
Yeah, it's just like basically a room with a television screen.
A telly window.
Yeah. Now, this is the weird thing I found this on the next page. Other than Charlie, the hero of this is a priest.
Because it's Pat, yeah.
Yeah.
When I reread it, yeah.
But now,
and clearly a Catholic one as well.
Yeah, and a good guy, seemingly.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a funny one. I was surprised by that. Yeah. So the priest is kind of the good guy, and he's heard about the Terramex. Let's all shout it, are coming to destroy the city. And he goes to try and get Charlie on side. Charlie doesn't really want to do that. Charlie's not into it, is he? It makes him feel sad and deep inside.
Programming. Yeah. This is the... Because in the intro to this, Pat says, didn't he, High Noon was a...
Yes, he does.
And this is where it's slightly different, because in High Noon, everyone just shuts the doors and lets Gary Cooper get on with it, don't they?
They do. Yeah,
we don't care if somebody hit you. That's not us. They let him get on with it.
Yeah, it's in the introduction to the Complete Nuts and Bolts, isn't it? It's in that one, I think.
Yeah.
He says that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, and then suddenly someone shouting, My son used to shout this when he needed to go to the toilet, but there's a load of robots shouting big jobs.
Yeah. That's a Scottish thing as well, a jobby.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And as we turn the page,
and then we get a barrier, which is a 3-drawer high dressing table and a rolled up mattress.
Yeah. So as if the town's about to be invaded by aliens or something, you know, or the Walking Dead or something, they put a load of
Hopefully they're all really small.
Yeah, you couldn't even crouch behind that, could you? Let's face it, it's too small to even crouch behind. But they've had a go. The Terramex are coming. Now that face of the woman at the shoe shouting the Terramex are coming is burnt into my eyeball. I recognise that. I'd recognise the story that's from immediately. Do you know what I mean? The way she's sort of holding her head. And reminded me a bit of the way the geezer holds his head on the front of Action Comics 1. And he's sort of running away from the car, you know, that's being lifted up.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So that's good. So that's the first prog we've talked about there. But we move into probably one of my favourite double page spreads in the whole of 2018.
It's insane, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you want to describe it for the listeners, dude?
You get it. It's got big jobs again.
Yeah.
And it's a colour splash as well. I always used to laugh at the colours they use for the robots.
Yeah.
Because you think they'd just be metal. But no, you get these ginormous things. You do see the people down on the ground.
Yeah, you do.
And these things are tower block size. They're absolutely massive. And you get this Tyranno mech.
Yep.
Fantastic. And my favourite, King Kong Kek.
King Kong.
Or King Conker.
King Kong. King Conker's great, isn't he? So, yeah. There's a little theme. So King Conker looks a bit like a gorilla with sort of wrecking balls rather than hands on chains, doesn't he?
Yeah. Got 10 gears forward, 5 reverse.
So they keep saying that, don't they?
Yes, he keeps fucking saying it.
Fantastic is kind of like a sort of city eater. In fact, he's the only one that appeared on the cover. So he's the this prog had the cover image for the only time in this story. And it's sort of a car being thrown down the neck of this monster, I think, as
He's
I recall.
The main sort of one at the front, cruncher upper, isn't he?
Yeah. And we've always thought, having read ABC Warriors, that Mechquake is the big...
was massive.
Was massive and nutty and, like, the most dangerous thing in the world. But he's tiny compared to them, isn't he?
He's minute, yeah. He's like a quarter of the height of them.
Yeah. And you've got another one beneath him that's a sort of warning robot, you know, like the one you get on the motorway saying, you know, something, you know, the road works ahead, and it says, danger, abnormal robots, something following. as if you wouldn't see them. Do you know what I mean? You need that sign.
No. or feel them coming for about 3 days.
Yeah. Now, another thing that really struck me on this is, bear in mind this was made in 78, drawn maybe 77. Have you noticed the badge on King Conker?
Oh, yeah.
It's the Watchman. It's the Watchman badge. Yeah.
Actually, I'm thinking that the 80s is all the acid stuff, wasn't it? I mean, it's not... Yeah, it's obviously way, way, way pre-Watchman, but yeah, the smiley face.
Yeah, it's even pre-Acid House and all that sort of thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite impressive. Yeah, I love that panel. And to me, it applied itself to my sensibility as a comic collector as a bit OCD. So I'm glad they almost had like little name badges so you could remember who they were.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like a Top Trumps thing, isn't it, with comic collectors?
And the colours. Tyranno Mech is silver-ish. Silver.
Yeah.
Fantastic is purple. And King Conker is green.
Yeah, what's... What's the purple like? Was he fucking Prince or something? Yeah, it is good though. It is an amazing page, isn't it?
It is a cracking page.
Yeah. That's the page for ages. Did you go to that talk that Pat and Dave Gibbons gave at the British Library? I think it was before I knew you, actually.
No.
And they talked about this strip a lot and about how much they loved it. Yeah.
I've seen Dave Gibbons. He thinks it's one of his high points of his career.
He does, yeah. I think I found him. I found a quote from him that said, "He genuinely does think that." Yeah, and I don't know whether I agree with him or not, but it's certainly a very high point for him. You know, for anything,
it's cracking. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the page, there's a little, very little blank space.
Yeah, and the characterization's great on this. There's quite a lot of writing, but it runs perfectly. Why are they not fucking toys, these robots? I mean, seriously, you know, all of us sort of, you know, very old men with disposable incomes would definitely buy one. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine the size of it.
Yeah.
It's a scale. You've got to go to work on it.
Yeah. And then the priest stands forward, like a Chinaman in Tiananmen Square. He stands forward, doesn't he, in front of Mekwake, in front of surely death. And he says, I think Mekwake says to him, how can you stop us, human? We are very huge and very strong, and you are very small and weak. Therefore, your words are illogical. Perfection. Yeah.
Illogical. Everyone joins in.
Yeah.
Robot talk.
And it's the nattering of big business, isn't it? It's the nattering of capitalism. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's the...
Well, you then get like 5 or 6 panels where they justify being able to kill people, even though it's against their programming, because then then they can still do their job, so it's okay.
Yeah, the logic then, of the fact that we're ruining the earth. You know, we're ruining communities. We're breaking down cities. We're making people poor, but there's a good reason for it. It's fine. Yeah. And after
you can't destroy anything warm and making noise.
Yeah, that's it. That's a great line, isn't it? Yeah. And then after sort of this discussion, they just decide they all shout destroy. And they sort of drive at them very fast. Yeah.
Did you notice the little it goes to the dumper truck.
Yeah.
And when they're having a little meeting between themselves and basically deciding if they're gonna go ahead and kill everyone. Mm. And he says, I go along with Tyrannomech. Whatever he says is good enough for me. And we work as a team. We are pals. And then it jumps to, we don't speak about that. And I thought, are they banging?
Yeah, it's robot sex. What is happening here?
I suppose he does empty his load into him. But
very good point, John. Nicely made. Yep. I'd watch that comic. I'd read that comic. I'll be honest with you. So then they just go off on one. They think, fuck it. You know what I mean? We're going to destroy the city. And they start kicking off. The thing I always notice about 2000 AD robots, and especially in ABC Warriors and Robusters, which is kind of the same thing, and to a certain extent in Nemesis as well, which is also connected, there's a genuine threat to human life in everyone they do, isn't it? And there's... Whilst the robots are often the servants of the humans, there's a real danger to them, I think, you know?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's down to... Because they just... Well, we, the humans, just mistreat everybody, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The revenge
they
is going to come.
Like slaves, and there's an uprising.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the uprising working man, which Pat's so very fond of.
Yeah, I think there is. And it's not like, I was reading some Justice League today, and it's not like Cyborg. You know, he's all very soft and shiny and rounded. These things are just spikes and fucking death, aren't they? And big teeth.
Yeah, I mean, you see that on, is it Fantastic? He's got like chariot big spikes coming out the side of his wheels.
Yeah, what's the reason for that?
No purpose whatsoever for demolition.
Yeah.
They look cool as shit and they'd fuck you up if you tried to stop him.
Yeah, there's blades on and all sorts, aren't there, on there? Yeah, we'll just chop you off, or you know. Yeah. But I think it becomes with Clint Langley's stuff as well. It's like there's a real sharp danger to these things. You couldn't even get close to them without getting hurt. You know.
Yeah.
I know we just had our cameras on, and you were showing me you've got some on your walls at home, haven't you? Some Clint Langley stuff.
Yeah. Clint Langley and Pat Mills are my dream team.
Right. Okay.
Love all the Slane stuff. But the ABC Warriors stuff, oh man, the detail on it is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I say, it's quite, I'd say angry, but yeah, even Rojaws looks like he'd fuck you up.
He does, doesn't he? I was always, as a kid, always thought he's quite frightening, Rojaws, because is he like a garbage android? And he sort of chows down on crap and garbage and tins and stuff, doesn't he?
Works in the sewers and eats the shit.
Yeah. And Hammerstein is basically a soldier. He's Rambo back from the war, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's killed a lot of people.
That was fighting the Vorgons, wasn't he? Which is the ones from Invasion.
Yep,
another
exactly.
Crossover.
Yeah. And I think, is it book 5 that Hammerstein is in Invasion. I think only a few years ago he made his way.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so no, they've had like Nemesis rocks up.
Yeah, he's been in the Nemesis one, hasn't he? Yeah. I like the idea of that, though. I like the idea of it being a joined universe. And like you say, we got the mention of Mega City 1 and Judge Dredd earlier. There's definitely that sort of joining. Whether it's just a little nod here and there, it does make it all, you sort of begin to connect the dots, don't you, in your head, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's better when you get a shared universe. You don't have to cross them over that much.
Yeah.
Even at all. But just mentioning, so you know they're all there at the same time. I think that's quite cool.
Yeah. So they begin to kill, don't they? These monsters do begin to kill. There's one point where a car ends up in its gob and all this sort of thing.
That's really grim, that, because that's a kid in the back of that car, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
It's two adults and either a much smaller adult or a child.
Yeah.
And the driver's going, got to find reverse, got to go around reverse. And then it's, what does it say? And the screams were soon lost in the roar of the atomic grinders.
That's it, yeah.
They get crushed to death and ground up.
Yeah, it's like a garbage disposal machine, isn't it? It's sort of like on the back of a rubbish lorry or something like that, just sort of grinding it to shit and killing it. Yeah. So Charlie's still sat there in, is it called Charlie's Seat? I think that he's actually got a name of where he sits, doesn't he? But in the harbour, I think it's called Charlie's Seat or something. I think you see it when the priest goes up to him. And he's still sat there and he doesn't know what to do because he's a pacifist, Charlie, isn't he? He doesn't want to hurt anyone. He just wants to save lives.
Save boats.
Yep. And then something seemed to snap inside Charlie. Charlie, him, angry. I love that panel. I think that panel really works. Yeah, you've got...
The dog floating on the air.
Yeah.
A bit. Oh!
And howling.
Charlie,
yeah.
Him, angry.
That's what we need Charlie to go mad for. Get that dog howling. Yeah, that's what works. And you then get a really nice view that reminded me of the sort of Toho sort of King Kong Godzilla movies, and you know, or the Mecha Godzilla, where they sort of approach each other at the bottom of that last panel. And it's like we're seeing them from a human scale, but they are obviously immense above the buildings. But it gives you that sense of he is a lone bloke walking into a bar to fight three blokes, isn't he, essentially? That's kind of how it sat with me. And then we move into the next prog, which is again one of my favourite panels is Charlie fighting someone, you know.
Straight into it, yeah.
Yeah. It's a lovely panel.
Yeah, flicking back to the names pages now.
Is it Tyrannomech?
Tyrannomech.
Yeah. So
he's
fighting.
Got a Skull and Crossbones badge on his, doesn't he? He's clearly
He's a nutter. That's what the shortcut for being a nutter is. And he's even got those like those spikes on them.
Big spiky feet.
Big spiky
like
shoes. Yeah. Like he's playing Inferno or something like that. It's that sort of rough and tumble. Now, this I always look at this page and think Dave Gibbons must have gone, I'll add a bit more. Just a bit more.
It doesn't stop, does it?
Yeah, there's so much detail.
Even down to the little, you see the little people on the roof to give the scale, but he's drawn bricks.
He hasn't he?
That must have taken ages and a haired brush to get those lines on there.
Yeah, and it looks lovely in the black and white in these hardbacks we've got. I have to say, it's really replicated well. And this is a brutal fight. This is being 2000 AD, you don't know who's going to win because 2000 AD will kill people and, you know, there'll be a twist because Charlie will die and, you know, there's that sort of thing going on, I think, sometimes with it, you know?
Well, that's what I always like with 2000 AD. You don't know. It might, you might, in the middle of a run or something, you might guess he might make it till the end, but you don't know if he's going to be alive at the end.
You don't,
anybody.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially with Pat's stories, you know. There's always that jeopardy with, you know, Slain or like the ABC Warriors or Nemesis or something like that. You don't know who's going to survive it, do you? You know, which I think is quite right too. Especially for this one, which we knew as a sort of one-off story.
Yeah.
We were used to it being Road Jaws and Hammerstein.
Exactly. And you don't know if he's going to be back.
Yeah. So there's this huge battle ongoing, and even Mr. Quartz begins to shit his pants, doesn't he? He said, I thought the site would be cleared before my mech started work. I'm not here. I'm not going to take the blame. Someone's got to take the responsibility. So he's even looking to shift the blame on someone at this point.
Yeah. And Councillor Murdoch. Is it Murdoch?
It is Murdoch, isn't it? I wonder if Murdoch... I'm a bit young to know if Murdoch was about then. Was he? I don't know.
I don't know if he owned a son then. I mean, I don't think anyone
don't
in Liverpool...
So.
Any would vote anyone called Murdoch into power now, though, would they?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Now, the... So Charlie ends up grappling... I have to go back myself. Fantastic, doesn't he? And that looks like he's grabbing a lion or something to me.
That reminds... Yeah, it's like the old... like King Kong fighting a Triceratops.
Yes. Yeah, good shout.
And he just sort of grabs it by the horns and snaps its neck kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he keeps fighting on. He ends up... The third one is King Conker, who's...
you get Mechaquake or Mechquake doing a runner.
Yep.
Just after that, which is an ongoing thing. Even years later, when he's in the ABC Warriors, he'll only fight someone much smaller that he knows he's definitely going to beat, won't he?
Yeah. I was always quite frightened of Mechquake as a kid because he used to eat people, didn't he, in Robusters?
Well, he was used... In the Robusters, he was the one, if they fucked up, he ripped them apart, didn't he?
That's right. And that's... Weren't Rojo's and Hammerstein saved from him?
Yeah.
One of the
few
first
times.
Stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like totally amoral. You know, literally no morals whatsoever, is he? He doesn't give a fuck. Yeah. He just does things.
I think there are a few where he pulls them apart. People get sort of Mr. 10% sentence or court sentences a few of them to death, and he literally pulls them apart, trumps them up.
Yeah, yeah. The next bit I really liked is Charlie ends up. He has like an axe, doesn't he? He turns a sort of building with a bit of lump of concrete on the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
Into an axe, and that's how he takes on King Conker, and it's so well done.
It's a pillar, but it's got a bit of road on it because it's got lines on it, hasn't it?
Oh, it has, isn't it? Yeah.
like an overbridge, a bridge with one of the upright, and he just starts winging it around.
Yeah, and he swings it around as if it's... like an axe or something like that, and he takes his head off with it. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. You know, the spaceship that Mr. Quartz and Murdoch escape in, the little sort of Quinjet kind of thing, reminds me of the Ian Kennedy days. Actually, I have to say, I think sort of the ship that escapes in is that sort of cool retro sci-fi thing going on, which looks really nice.
I love this. I've got one of his. I showed you it, but I got it at Troops, not Troops. Thought Bubble.
Okay.
I photocopied it. Because it's colour, well, I photocopied it, so it's black and white, and I've put the photocopy on the wall, and I've kept the actual picture in one of the books.
Oh, well, you've got one of the originals.
It's just a sketch he's done.
Oh, okay.
And
you did show me. That's right. Of course you did. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Artwork, Christ.
Yeah, Kennedy's great, isn't he? Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, yeah. The other thing I meant to say is that opening page of this issue, this part of the story. This prog is, it reminds me of something by Kirby. You know, it could be the opening page of Hercules versus Thor in a Kirby book. You know, there's that that
it's,
dramatic,
it's
bombastic. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, very much so. And I don't think it's in this version. I don't think it is. But there's a poster of Tyrannomech, which appeared late in one of the later progs, but I couldn't see it in this one. Like a 2000 AD star pin-up, also done by Gibbons, which looks lovely. But there it is. Pardon me. It's like last page, just for the writers and the artist bit, right at the back of this volume. I had it as a black and white in my original Titan version, but it's in this one. If you go all the way to the back, coloured in the most bizarre.
Yellow and red.
yellow.
That makes more sense. Yeah.
It does a bit, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true. Yeah.
Crunch in the house.
So while they're escaping, they decide to get a destroyer. They hire a warship.
They decide to they get a naval destroyer to trick, because Charlie loves ships so much that he'll go out there. It fires a flare up. Charlie go out to rescue the ship, and then it will fuck him over.
So I think Mr. 10% says we call up the Navy and tell them Charlie's destroying North Pole. We get them to send an SOS signal to lure Charlie out to sea. And as Charlie always helps ships in distress, he'll go. Yeah, so they're fucking up Charlie there. That's their sort of...
See the name of the ship as well?
Yes, Nemesis, isn't it?
It's Nemesis, yeah.
Yeah. So they send the flare up. Charlie is standing over the bodies of all these broken up robots that he's destroyed, or the other ones escape. And Charlie goes out, but the priest is shouting to him. It's a destroyer,
yeah,
come back,
Charlie,
come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, he goes out there. There's typical sort of Navy man, bearded captain with his wrong coloured hat on.
He's classic Navy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Yeah. He says, ahoy, humans, and they fire on him. So they fire missiles on him, and he's destroyed.
They do a little, because his second in command's at, we can't do it, it's Charlie. And the captain says, but Charlie's got to die because he's just destroyed Northpool. So
yeah, I don't like this any more than you do, number two. But Charlie's got to die. Yeah. Yeah, heartbreaking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I you see on a couple of pages later, I just generally think that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. It's a real shame. Okay, so Charlie is apparently destroyed. The newspapers, the North Pole Evening Echo, the North Pole Sun, they all blame it on Mr. Quartz, don't they? He says, what, Robusta's shares have dropped to one credit a share, I'll be ruined. He's worried about the money.
All about the money.
Yeah, yeah, another little indication there. And we get that, but we get a little shot of the bed of the sea, and Charlie's lights have sort of turned on, his eye lights have sort of come on. And the community see something out of sea, and they spread the word Charlie's back, and they all walk out. And then he walks through the harbour. He sort of comes to his feet and walks through the harbour and stands there with his hands in the air. And they sing, "You'll Never Walk Alone," which is obviously
an
indication.
And you get quite a literal, because there's a storm, isn't there? So he's literally walking on through the wind and through the rain as well.
Yeah, there isn't there. Yeah. Do you know where that...
And
do you know
where...
Come on.
I'd seen... Even in Germany, we didn't really see the telly or anything, but we watched Liverpool beat Mönchengladbach in the European Cup final.
Yeah.
So I knew what that song was.
Right.
What it meant. And even when you're not a Liverpool fan, when you hear that against song, it does get you.
Yeah.
So when I was reading that, I was singing that.
Do you know where it comes from originally?
No.
It comes from Carousel, the musical. It was made more famous. I read this today, whether it's true or not. I think I read it online, but it's it was some made most famous by Jerry and the Pacemakers, but written by, get this, Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Oh, fuck off! No
way. Yeah, I don't know if that's true. I read that on some website. I'm thinking that I haven't had time to write that. Can't be fucking true, but it sounds like it might be.
I bet Pat's gone and put that on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I put all kinds of facts on Wikipedia, mostly about Vince Hunt, but none of them are true. God bless him. So it's also a song, weirdly, isn't it? It's a song that we've heard in this lockdown.
Yeah.
So it comes back around, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's a strange one. Yeah. So, but you're right, as the ship that sinks Charlie is HMS Nemesis.
Like the little bit just before Charlie gets up as well. You get the you catch up with the other two that have run away. And one of them's literally been bulldozing, the other one's been laying tarmac the whole time.
Yeah.
So there's this big fucking road across the whole of the North England.
And then I think it's a couple of progs later that you actually get the pin-up that is the cover to this.
Right.
So you almost get the finish or the, you know, the epilogue of the story in a pin-up that comes later.
And that's the cover.
Yeah, and then that's the cover, which is him getting the key to the city of Northpool, which is really interesting, isn't it? Yeah, it's a clever way to do it, a really nice way to do it.
Okay, yeah, that's in the back there, isn't it? You can see where it should be coloured, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's a short story, isn't it? But it's one that had an impact on me as a kid. And it's one that can have an impact on me as an adult, I think. You know, it's a nice standalone story.
It is the first... When I was thinking back, when I first bought the... And I was going through the Nuts and Bolts Volume 1, because I knew I hadn't read any of them. And this is only... like 2 years ago or something like that, and I was thinking, what was the first one? And this was the first one that came to my head. This is the first one I remembered reading, though it actually wasn't the first one I read.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think I read it and thought, oh, why isn't Rojaws in this? You're right, it sticks in my mind as... I don't know, maybe it's the art, maybe... Because Gibbons has got a sort of style that I've always thought his style is suited to both English comics and American comics. And it's a cleaner, and I'd read a lot of American comics by that time. It was a sort of cleaner line to it that perhaps I've sort of remembered a bit better. You know, he's not Mike McMahon and he's not Kevin O'Neill, is he? There's not that sort of strangeness, I suppose, yeah, that is evident in their work. You immediately get everyone in it, don't you? You know,
he's very good at straight on faces as well.
He really is, isn't he?
A lot of people can fuck him up.
Yeah,
it's like the second page of the Sailor saying it's faithful old reliable Charlie, and if you just show me that panel, I would go Dave Gibbons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's loads of that in this, isn't it? Yeah, and I think you can see little bits of Steve Dillon that Steve Dillon got from Dave as well. As much as I love Steve's work as well, the priest reminds me. Maybe it's because he's a priest, and I'm used to seeing him draw priests, but reminding me a little of some
Steve Dillon. American-looking priest, though, isn't he, with his crew cut and everything?
He is, isn't he? Yeah, he's like a sort of an American army guy almost, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. Dare I say a touch of Trump about him somewhere? But except he's got a proper haircut. Yeah.
Yes, it's all his real hair.
Yeah. Would you have? So that's the story. I'm sorry for spoilers, but it's a fucking 40-year-old comic.
Might as well just practically read it.
Yeah. One of my favourites. Are there any ones other sort of 2080? Because I know you contacted me and said, oh, we should do a Pat story, because obviously we're friends with Pat, and you know, got Spacewalk coming up, and it's I suppose it's where our friendship began, wasn't it? We met in a bar at a Pat signing.
In a pub with Pat, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you said, well, why don't you do a Pat one? Because it sort of takes it back around, doesn't it? And is there any other sort of stories that you would have liked to have done, or maybe we could do in the future? What would have been your sort of second choice? Because I chose this one, I think, didn't I, as Oracle?
A lot of them go into ABC Warriors, and they're quite big runs after that, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, there's some real good long runs. A lot of the Clint Langley stuff is a long run in that stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. You know. Mars Rolls. It Return to Mars, Return to...
Yeah, I think one of them's like three volumes, isn't it? I read it in those sort of black volumes they brought out, which are lovely, really nicely reproduced.
One I'm reading at the minute, it's written by Pat and Tony Skinner.
Okay.
It's painted art by Kev Walker.
Right.
The Chronicles of Chaos.
Oh, yeah.
It's really fucking... Well, that's probably why Tony's there, actually. Really dark shit.
Yeah.
Really, really gruesome. And you get... It's almost sort of Bisley-esque, the painting and stuff.
Yeah.
Where you get spikes and stuff going through people, and there's, you know, just the old flick of the paintbrush with a spray of paint. And
yeah.
People being decapitated and ripped to bits. And I'm sure it's got, you know, the old Warhammer, Space Marine, 40K and all that.
Okay.
I'm sure these are in this.
Oh, wow, okay. That's very
popular. They look like the little models that my son used to paint, and I know Pat's written some of those books, hasn't he?
Yeah, I know the those figures, because my son used to paint them as well, and they I think we had to remortgage the house at one point, you know.
Oh, they're ridiculous, man.
Yeah. What about sort of 2000 AD. I was going to say there is the sad thing about this is they didn't write. There isn't that much Robusters, is there? I think one point Pat sort of took off and did ABC Warriors instead, and I think Alan Moore has written a couple of them in this.
Wrote a couple of them. Yeah, they're in. Are they in this one? In the Nuts and Bolts?
I think they might be. I can't remember. I've got a couple of versions.
Yeah,
and it sort of jumped about between artists and writers, and Dave does do sort of four or five stories, but it does jump about between creative teams, doesn't it? And it's a shame. And I know they came back, Robusters. What did they come back for? Was it the 40th anniversary thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they came
and
back.
And then there was that one. In fact, that's the one in that pub. He was on about the Bisley one that he still hasn't finished.
Oh, Joe Pineapples. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe and it's Rojaws, isn't it? Standing on an asteroid that he's eaten.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's only 7 or 8 years late now. We'll get it one day, maybe.
Yeah, no, right.
There's that. I really like the ABC Warriors. I think the parallels with the Vietnam War, and you get this with a couple of the flashbacks in this volume, don't you? With Hammerstein. I think there's a real relevance to us now about soldiers coming back from war and not being treated particularly well and stuff like that. There really is. I mean, I'm lecturing at the wrong person, but you must know that. You must see that yourself, dude. Do you?
Yeah, I see it a lot with mates and stuff.
Yeah.
And I, not, yeah, no, let's not run that down. But yeah, I had a thing, but it wasn't related to that. But
right.
Yeah,
Well, this is what Help for Heroes and stuff, isn't it? That's what it's all about, you know. It's a huge charity because people see the disservice we do in this country to soldiers coming back, you know, with terrible injuries often. Yeah.
Yeah, it's shit that has to be. That shouldn't even exist.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, they're just down the road from me, Help for Heroes in Sydney.
Oh, okay.
I did a bike ride to Italy. I was talking about this the other day. I think it's still on my Twitter feed. It said to recently cycled to Italy. It was 2011. To update that, I think. Yeah.
So
I went down there. I got to, half the money went to them, half went to a hospice, but I got to go down there and see the setup.
Right.
And it's amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And the things that they do and the people they look after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to get the early train in every day into work when I was working in London. And there was a guy on my train, and he had lost the bottom part of both of his legs. And I used to get like the 5:15 train, and he got the 5:15 train on a bicycle every day. And I'm too lazy to have got on that bicycle, but he managed it. And I thought, there you go, that's a dude. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You do get there's a lot. Let's say stigma. I don't think there was stigma before, but they do that amputees before. If you lost a limb, that's you. You're out. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
You got a medical pension, you got discharged, whereas now they do find, I think it's because you get better prosthetics now than you used to have, so they do find jobs for them, admin jobs a lot, primarily, or driving jobs.
Yeah.
So I looked after a bit better that way, not at all with the mental health side of it, but
I can imagine.
You still see quite a lot of them, because I live up the road from where my last posting was.
Okay.
So it's a big garrison, and you still, I mean, I was in Lidl, just last year, and a guy pulled in a big Merc, nearly hit me, pulled into a disabled thing, and I thought, you fucking prick. I turned over there to have a go at him, door opened, and these two prosthetic legs got out. I thought, like, oh, mate, just walked to my car, I thought, oh, all right.
But that's what this is about, isn't it? That this is... Not only just his story, but, you know, Roadbusters and the ABC Warriors, that's what it's about. It's about these are the normal guys. They may be robots in this, but fuck all that. They are the guys. They're the, you relate more to the robots in these stories than you do to humans often, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the... I think Pat says it in the Future Shots thing. He found it sad he had to go into sci-fi to tell these stories.
Yeah.
People didn't want it as real. So you have to make it robots to get the story across.
Yeah, it's the old story with sci-fi. It's been the only place we can tell stories sometimes, isn't it? You know, if you told this in real life, everyone either wouldn't get commissioned or everyone would think it would be boring. But make it about a battle on Mars. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you take it out of Mars, you put it in Afghanistan, take away the robots, make them squaddies.
It is. It really is. Yeah, and the horrors of war and returning home to try and find a job. And being treated so badly, and it's incredible that this was written, you know, 40 odd years ago, and it still stands up so well. Yeah, it really does. Yeah, interesting.
I spoke to Pat about, because I said, you know, straight away, clear the air, like, I'm an ex-squaddy.
Yeah.
Knowing his sort of, not hatred, but doesn't like the army and things like that. And we've had some really good talks about what they do.
Yeah, when similar you're overseas, from my situation. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I said, although he keeps calling Charlie's War an anti-war comic, it's a realistic war comic.
Yeah, yeah, I get that.
Because he's not putting anything in there that isn't real. It's just not glorifying all the, you know, Actung, Jerry, all this kind of shit.
Yeah, it's not The Eagle Had Landed, but The Eagle Has Landed isn't a real war comic, a war movie, is it? You know, it's... Right, man. Yeah, and I think I'd make the same argument about his superhero comics. He says, I can't write superhero comics. I don't like writing superhero comics. But Martial Law is one of the best ones.
I got a Batman book of his the other day.
Right. Okay.
Where is it? Book of Shadows.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Which he? Have you read it?
I think so. I think, is it part of the Legends of the Dark Knight? Is it part of that run?
I don't know. I think it's just a standalone. It's a little. It's got it. Right. A little trade. With Debbie Gallagher, who's the other writer.
Okay.
It's all quite occulty, which is in, you know, I think from reading it, even like Pat had come up the story and the background stuff of all the, you know, the occult things and the ceremonies, but she put the words in.
Right, okay. Yeah. That's maybe when Pat was going to those parties. He likes to say they were ceremonies. I'm going to...
Yeah.
Say no more.
But he's still right. It's a good Batman story.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, man, because he's a good writer. That's the thing. Yeah, no, it's brilliant. So for you, let's say we do a lot, sometimes do a lot in out of 10, but it can't be an out of 10 in relation to all comics. So I think that's a ridiculous question sometimes. But in relation to the 2000 AD stable of comics from the sort of 70s and 80s, where does this, which to me is the golden age of 2000 AD, where does this stand for you? How many out of 10 would you give it?
An easy 8, if not higher.
Yeah.
Even reading it now, I know at the time I was more impressed as an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Watching these giant robots smash the shit out of each other, and that was without even understanding
Social dynamics of it. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
That's a good story, isn't it? How it works on so many levels.
Yeah. It does.
There's the kid's story of robots fighting, and then there's the background story that you pick up as an adult.
There's just the basic, Charlie is an underdog, will he make it through fighting these monsters? You know, that's kind of it, isn't it? And then beyond that, you've got the situation, the socio-economical, situation in the United Kingdom, and what we were doing to people, what was happening in the country, and who was who, and what was what. And it's quite an achievement when you think
about it. And it's happening now, isn't it? If you go to London, most people can't afford any of the new houses that are getting built there.
Mate, nobody can. Yeah, do you know what I mean? You're either tend to a house or you're a millionaire.
Yeah, or you're Russian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or you're just somebody buying up loads of flats to rent them out. Yeah, that's kind of where it sits. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant, man. No, that's good. We're gonna break for an advert, and then we're just gonna have a talk with you about what you're reading at the moment and what sort of thing you're up to. So if you just want to stand by for a word from our sponsors, we've got a new sponsor. Is your life without focus? Are you sleepwalking through the day without any real purpose? Are you unable to decide for yourself what is a good thing to do and what is a bad thing to do? Or maybe feeling a bit guilty about wanking too much? Then you need a set of ridiculously twisted, confusing and hypocritical rules to your life. Why not become religious? There are loads of different yet often similar faiths you can follow blindly. Please send £310,000 in cash to www.imafuckingidiot.org for a starter pack, or the devil will bum you. Thanks to that,
is this the one you said I can use the code HotTony69 and I get
HotTony69 will get you, I think it's just 10%. Yeah, that's right.
Cool.
So that's a completely moral advert that I took. I got money for. That's fine. Yeah, it's better than Blue Penny.
I thought the wanking too much was really aimed at me.
It is locked down. It is boring.
Have I still got the camera on?
Especially with that new sexy haircut you showed me. What's going on there? So the thing is, John, you and I mostly meet at conventions or events, and there haven't been any. It's been a bit shit. What are you reading at the moment, man? Because you're a consumer of 2000 AD and comics and small press and all sorts of things. What have you been doing?
I was going to have a go. I have been reading Alan Moore's Jerusalem.
Oh, nice.
Prose. It's fucking massive.
Yes, it's like a million words.
I got it when it came out. It's the first fiction book to be bigger than the Old Testament.
Wow, okay.
And the font is so small on it as well, I have to wear glasses to read it. I have had words with him about it.
You can't have that in Audible. What? That would fill your phone up. You wouldn't be able to listen to it.
It's 50-something hours, because I have got it.
Brilliant.
I had a go, and I did read, because you can either get it as one whack, or you can get it in threes, and I got it in three.
Yeah.
And I have read the first one, but it didn't really go in. I just found it a slog. But once I've got stuck into it again, and I said I was talking to Robin Ince the other day.
Yep.
He was saying it's really funny. I was like, what? And then I've been rereading it. It is really funny. There's a lot of humour in there.
Yeah.
So that has been my lockdown plan.
Oh, good man.
Then there's this podcast where this dick keeps talking to people about really cool comics.
Twat.
And end up reading those comics. That's been flexing me a lot.
What ones have you read, man?
What happened to the Man of Tomorrow?
Oh, nice. You did send me a picture of that one.
Death in the Family. Had those. Nice. I did. Oh, hey, A Man of Steel. Just listened to the short one. I like that, actually, Man of Steel. That's always my
Yeah.
In my head, my go-to start, origin for Superman.
Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah, I don't hugely dislike it. I just found its bits of it went, oh, what? You know, I didn't want to hate on it too much because Stuart loves it.
Yeah. What was the other one? What was the Daredevil one the other day?
Oh, Born Again.
Yeah, because I read that last year when Daredevil came out. Oh, it's good. Kind of that story, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So
that was fresh. But I didn't have... Oh, balls. I can't remember.
Yeah, I've done the episodes and I can't remember what they are. I know what you mean.
But yeah, most of them. And they're really... I mean, the one you did with Jason Wilson...
It's good, isn't he? It's a good lad.
I'd never even heard of those comics, but I just love listening to him talk.
He's great, isn't he, man? Yeah.
Awesome, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, he's been telling me loads more dodgy movie recommendations today. He sent me this thing. You should watch this. It's a French sci-fi movie about a spaceship in the shape of a lady, and she farts away across the universe or something. And I thought, oh, this sounds interesting.
hence the "Have you been masturbating too much?" advert.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's where that came from. Yeah,
but religious. I was also Ken Reynolds sent me, you know, from his Cognition comics. There's a guy there called Silas Pope.
Okay.
The guy in charge.
Yeah.
He's been doing some prose for his Patreon.
Ah, oh, of course he has. Yeah.
And they're excellent. So he's putting that together as a book to release either this year or next year.
Right.
He sent me up the beta read, and it's fucking brilliant, man. It's I keep saying to him, if this was in The Strand next to Conan Doyle's Home Stories, you wouldn't tell them apart.
Right, good stuff, so yeah.
Written that way. Other than Pope isn't as much of a snob or a dickhead as Holmes is,
yeah,
but it, just the way it's worded and the way they speak is just fantastic stuff.
Oh, good stuff, man. And that, well, I don't think we've said that is one of the reasons we know each other, is because we're both beta readers for Pat, aren't we?
Yes, how we met in the pub.
Yeah, weird.
Normally you meet people and then you meet Pat Mills through them, whereas I started with Pat and worked my way down.
Good. Thank you for that, mate. Thanks for coming on, dude. That was a nice one. That was a nice one to read as well. It's I reread it when I went to that talk of the British Library with them, and then I reread it again this time, and it's such a joy to read that one. It's nice and short and punchy and beautiful and well-written and, you know, has loads of themes to it and everything. Yeah, really good stuff. Okay, let's do the outro. Well, there you have it. Hopefully you got something out of that. You can find me normally over at neverironanything.blogspot.com. You can buy my comics at neverironanything.bigcartel.com. You can follow me on Twitter at SOSEZOHYZ. John, where can people follow you? What is your home address, and where can people follow you online?
You can find me shouting at Boris Johnson at John Ottaway on Twitter, or see pictures of my dinner on Instagram at Johnny Ottaway. I don't even know what I put on there. I mostly go on there to look at stuff you've not put on. Well, not you. You don't do anything, do you?
Yeah. Nonsense.
I like Vince's little Instagram.
It's going comic. Well, isn't it? It's looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
Very, very different art to what he normally does.
Yeah. Defo. Nice one, man. Well, hopefully we'll catch up at a con soon, if they ever start.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah. All right, man. See you soon, baby cakes.
All right. Cheers, man. Cheers, man.